Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This episode is all about labour and childbirth, and my guest is midwife and childbirth educator, Avril Flynn.
We need to change the whole lexicon around birth. We need to change how we describe it to each other and what we focus on. And my focus is always on, what do you want as a woman and as a birthing person, as somebody that's going to go through this amazing life event? When you vision that moment of you holding your little baby, what has just happened? What's happened for you? What does that look like? What does that feel like? And when you have that picture, how do we get there? And it's different for everybody, but, you know, putting yourself at the centre of your own story is so important.
Avril lives in Dublin with her husband, Garrett, their 3-year-old son, Felix, and their dog, Finn. And in this conversation, she takes us from that first contraction right through to that glorious cup of tea and slice of toast after you give birth. We also share our own positive birth experiences, making this a valuable listen, especially for first timers. She's honest and naturally funny, and her advice is reassuring, practical, and empowering. And I started the chat by asking her to tell us a little bit about herself.
I am a midwife. I'm a childbirth educator, and I have my own business, funnily enough, called AvrilFlynn.com. And I provide support, education, classes to not only pregnant women and people, but to single mums, single dads, everyone from the LGBTQI plus family bracket, people who are going through adoption, surrogacy. And I absolutely adore my job.
And anyone that has interacted with you or has, you know, has done any classes or courses with you speaks extremely highly of you. So I feel very honoured that you're here, and
oh, that's
I'm excited.
Very kind.
No, it's just the truth. I'm really excited about this episode because I think, you know, the four pregnancy related episodes that we're recording, this really is the biggie. This is when it gets real, when baby is about to say hello to their mum, their dad, their parents, whoever they might be. And it's a very exciting, stroke, nerve-wracking time, particularly for first-timers. But it doesn't need to be scary. It can actually be really exciting and a very powerful, empowering time in your life. And the great thing is, once again, it's something that we share. We both had a really positive birth experience. And I think it's important that people hear that it's possible, very, very possible, for you to have the same. And the you I'm referring to is a person that's listening to us now. This can happen. If it happened for us, it can happen to you. So your little boy is 3 now, Felix.
That's right.
So can you share your own birth experience with us?
Yeah, and I love what you were saying there. I feel that we need to, one of my taglines is taking the fear out of birth one bump at a time. And I had obviously been a midwife, and I had, it was almost like the ultimate research project to have a baby myself. But the weird thing about me was I did not like being pregnant. I didn't enjoy it at all. I had a very healthy pregnancy, but I was incredibly anxious. I'd had an ectopic pregnancy previously, and that had been very traumatic. And I definitely carried that into the pregnancy.
Yeah.
I also lost my mum when I was 22. Okay. And even though that had happened years ago, a lot of mother stuff came up for me.
Yes.
So I found pregnancy really, really tough. And I was more nervous, I think, than I thought I would have been about birth. But I am, I suppose, an avid reader and an avid investigator. And I have always seen in my practice and in my work that birth can be both gorgeous and transformative. And I know people will kind of be listening going, oh, come on now, really. But genuinely, I think it is the ultimate, you know, what's your superpower? Oh, I gave birth to a human. And if we could stand back a bit and see that and my own story bore that out. So my sister was getting married on the 2nd of August and Felix was due on the 1st. So I think I willed myself into labour.
He was due on the 1st of August?
Yes.
So that was my due date as well.
Was it?
Yeah, my little boy was born in the early hours of the 2nd.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, isn't that mad?
We just missed each other then.
just a year apart.
Oh, there you go. So I went into, and I was getting pretty grumpy because I was her maid of honour.
Okay.
So I was determined if I had to crawl down the aisle, like I'm very close to both of my sisters, but Megan is my little baby. So I was determined. So I think I kind of willed myself into labour.
So when was her wedding?
So her wedding was on the 2nd. So this was the 28th. I felt the first twinge.
28th of July.
Yes.
And her wedding was the 2nd of August.
Yes. So, okay. Yeah. So felt kind of twinge. And then, as we'll discuss later, labour doesn't happen in a straight line.
No.
And particularly for first-time mums, your body has never done this before.
Yes.
So if you imagine your cervix is like a donut. So it's a long, closed, thin tube, like a donut with a little dot in the middle. And for labour to happen, and during labour, it has to totally thin out, so go paper thin and then open up. So what we call effacement is thinning out and dilation, which is opening up. So that's why it takes so long. And because your body's never done this before, it can happen in fits and starts.
Yes.
So you can have a couple of twinges and think, oh, here we go. And then you go to sleep, nothing happens. And then the next day and the next day. And that's what kind of happened to me. It was kind of on and off. And I was determined as well that I really wanted a vaginal delivery. There's no right or wrong way to give birth. It's all about choice. Yes. But for me, I really wanted, I suppose, to experience it. And I really felt my body was capable and able.
Yeah.
So I labored at home, eating more. Poor Deliveroo, I'd say, was one of their best. some women in labour aren't hungry at all. I was ravenous.
Yeah.
And for stuff that I hadn't eaten, because I was just like, well, you know, why not?
Absolutely.
So burgers, chips, like all the stuff.
Give me everything.
And the pain and in labour is difficult to describe. But for me, I felt as kind of like a strong period-like pain.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really pain. It was more kind of discomfort and pressure. And very strangely, I'm a very tactile person, but I didn't want my husband or anybody else near me.
Yes.
So I was really happy. I literally like was turning the lights off and listening to my tunes and had my nice aromatherapy at home. And I was just very, very content there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that kind of brings us on to the morning of the 30th. So at about 3 o'clock in the morning, I had had enough. You know, I felt myself that things were happening. And I also was pretty tired at that stage. And I felt that I wanted to kind of go in and see, could I make the wedding or not?
Yeah. but so this is still in your mind.
Yeah. Well, if
have baby, it's attend wedding.
Yeah, it sounds, I've always been known to be fairly dramatic. So maybe I did it just for the story. Who knows? But so I went in at about 3 a.m. and I had worked in the Coombe, and I really didn't want to go in and be told I wasn't in labour and then be mortified. So yeah. Embarrassing, yeah. For a minute. And not that anyone would even mind, but it was a personal thing for me. So I sneakily examined myself before I went in, so I knew things were happening.
Okay, wow, well done.
Yeah, I've long arms, yeah. And a lot of pillows. That's all I'll say. So anyway, went in and I was 5 centimetres at that stage.
Wow.
And yeah. And I was I was really interested in what my body was doing and how I was feeling, because it was very different to what I thought it would be. I thought I would want a lot of holding and cuddling and smooching, get that oxytocin flowing. And actually I was, you know, get away from me. But I felt really impaired. But like, it sounds really weird, but I enjoyed the process.
Well, while you're speaking, I'm thinking myself, and I think I was like you. When you say you're tactile, I'm exactly the same. I'm normally a very huggy kind of person. And I don't remember wanting any kind of rubs in the back or anything like that.
It was funny, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
And that's one of the things I'll say to anybody listening. What you imagine, you know, it's why have different options that you might like. Because you might be somebody that really wants a firm massage or a light touch massage. Or you might be like us, that you want to just be left alone.
Yeah, yeah.
So feel free to do. There's no right or wrong way to do it.
Big time.
So anyway, I went straight over to the delivery suite and I was happy enough to bounce on my ball and get that gas and air, which I had never really rated before. But oh my goodness.
Oh yeah,
I loved it.
Me too.
Absolutely loved it. If I could have packaged it and brought it home. It was great. And also I'm very lucky. A lot of my friends and colleagues still work in the Coombe, so they were kind of popping in. And I think they probably drew short straws as to who was going to look after me, because I'm sure they're like, this one is going to be an absolute pain. Not that they would.
No, but it's hard to look after,
you know, a colleague,
yeah.
Particularly a know-it-all like me. because of my history of endometriosis, I went consultant-led, so my consultant kind of popped in and I was doing great. And then everything kind of stopped. I got to 5 centimetres and 2 hours later I was still 5 centimetres. And 2 hours later, I was still 5 centimetres. And at that stage, they, you know, we were talking about augmenting. So augmenting means you're in labour, but things have stalled. Mm. So I bounced. I did everything that I could, but kind of nothing happened. And we gave it another 2 hours. And at that stage, I was exhausted. Nothing had kind of happened.
And this is very common, isn't it?
Really, really common.
When you leave your environment,
Absolutely, when you leave the little nest, the little hub. Most people begin again, but you know, really they had, like, it was the absolute right call. So I was started on a drip, and at that stage I said, you know what, I'm going to get an epidural.
Yeah.
Because I reckoned myself how tired I was, and I thought, if I want to have a vaginal delivery, this is how we do it. So anyway, that I got the epidural in at about 9 a.m. and then Felix was born an hour and a half later. So all I needed, all my body needed, was a tiny little bit of a break, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I loved giving birth. I just thought it was so cool.
That's quick though, isn't it?
Yeah, Emma? Really, really quick. So I went 5 to fully in like no time at all. Yeah. So I was just, you get little roadblocks. And that's the funny thing about our bodies. They don't follow a straight line. Everybody is different.
Yes.
And how your body, and remember, your body is reacting to another body inside it.
Yes, of course.
So there's an interchange there. So You know, maybe Fifi wasn't in the perfect position or something and then got into one. Who knows? But anyway, he flew out. I caught him.
Oh, wow.
And he had the cord wrapped around his neck, but I wanted to do optimal cord clamping. Mm. So before anyone could do anything, I literally whipped it off and gave him a good firm cuddle, let's say. And he let a big roar out of him and straight onto my chest. And it was just amazing.
Wow.
I loved it.
And the student
midwife was there as well. So that was a lovely birth for her to catch.
So of course.
Just loved it.
And for somebody, so you're doing something for the very first time. You're becoming a mother for the very first time, but you're also a midwife. So you have all these skills that, like that, I don't know many women who probably have the confidence to be able to grab their baby the second they give birth and do all of that.
Nightmare.
So
yeah.
Well done,
but
you.
I just loved it. And also I felt as well with having lost my own mother, at that moment of birthing, I finally understood what a maternal love felt like.
Yeah.
And I hadn't felt that close to her in years. And I really felt for me, and that's what I talk about, healing as birth as healing and transformative. For me, it was closing that mother circle or that mother shaped hole.
Wow.
So it was, and Felix has my mother's crinkly little eyes. So I really felt it was just beautiful. And I want other women and other families to have that opportunity. And we just have such, I suppose, the pervasive line around birth is one of, oh, you know, leave your dignity at the door, and oh, well, you know, telling each other bad stories. And we need to change the whole lexicon around birth. We need to change how we describe it to each other and what we focus on. And my focus is always on, what do you want as a woman and as a birthing person, as somebody that's going to go through this amazing life event? When you vision that moment of you holding your little baby, what has just happened? What's happened for you? What does that look like? What does that feel like? And when you have that picture, how do we get there? And it's different for everybody, but, you know, putting yourself at the center of your own story is so important.
It is.
And seeing it as not something to be suffered, but something to be embraced, and, you know, a story that we can tell each other. And I mean, imagine if we all sat around and told each other amazing birth stories. You know, imagine how lovely and supportive that would be, as opposed to what happens at the moment is, oh, well, Auntie Sharon now, never been the same, and she was in labour for 3 days, and, you know.
And can I just say on that, without like this major TMI warning this entire episode, I don't think my partner will ever be able to listen to these episodes without cringing wildly. But this whole thing of, oh, after give birth, you're never the same down there again. Let me tell you, my friends, yes, you are.
Yeah, or better.
I would go better.
Yeah, or better. Like, you know.
It's not true. It's not true. And we both had vaginal deliveries.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, you know, we had C-sections and obviously, you know, a baby didn't come out that way. So we don't feel the impact. It's nonsense. Okay, obviously it depends on various different situations and whether there's tearing and stitching and whatever it entails. But I think for the vast majority of women, it's totally fine, because your body is a beautiful and wonderful and powerful tool, and it knows what to do, and it does kind of go back.
It was made to do this. You know, we are the product of millions of years of evolution, and women's bodies are amazing. You know, as I said at the beginning, what's your superpower? I grow humans. But the whole system is actually made really, really well. And a lot of the time we focus on when things go wrong, but we don't focus on that in the main, most things go really right.
Yeah.
And your body grows, just, you know, in the middle, for example, you at the moment, in the middle of a pandemic, with the world, you know, being unsure and crazy, you have managed your amazing body without a conscious thought to grow a beautiful, healthy, perfect little being inside you. How amazing is that?
For sure. And I know how lucky I am. And you know what? I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's important that we kind of refer to the landscape of the now, and certainly what it has been for so many women who have given birth in the height of the restrictions, without getting into detail about it. You know, hats off to you. And anyone who's concerned about it now, because, you know, when I gave birth 4 years ago, life was very different. And my heart really does go out to everyone who is feeling that added stress that goes with the now. And it's easy to say, but just relax and not, and all the rest. But the more you do try and connect with yourself and your baby and tell yourself that you have this, the better the experience will be, regardless of how baby comes into the world or you decide what to do. But as you said, it's about you making that decision for yourself, not leaving it up to everyone else to make it for you.
And also protecting what I call your birthing space. And I don't mean that in a literal sense. I mean that you have to be a gatekeeper for what you feed into yourself. Mm. So for example, I would be really anti anybody that's pregnant watching One Born Every Minute or one of the live birth shows or whatever. Like I would put it akin to watching The Fast and the Furious and then learning how to drive.
Yeah.
It's a show. It is meant for dramatic purposes. They will pick the most dramatic, you know, they won't show somebody, you know, just coming in, having a baby, everything going well and going home. So if you've listened to positive podcasts, watch positive YouTube clips, ensure that you guard your space, that if somebody is telling you a negative story, you just say, can I just stop you there? I haven't had this experience yet, but when I do, I'll listen to yours.
Yeah.
Whereas we can be quite bad in Ireland for just, we'll kind of suffer through because we don't want to be rude.
Yeah.
And we need to stop being so polite.
And I was saying this to Kitty in last week's episode where, you know,
isn't Kitty amazing?
She's fantastic.
And Luciana's are like, they're just
fab.
They're, yeah.
Really fab. But like people love to tell you when you kind of share what your desired wish is for your own birth experience, to tell you that, Ara, that's nonsense because you haven't done this before and you think you know, but you don't. And people can be very dismissive. I don't think they mean to be hurtful. They think in a strange way maybe they're doing you a favour by preparing you for the reality of it. But just because somebody that you know, be it a sister or a friend, has had their experience that is different to yours, doesn't mean that it's not possible. I loved hearing your birth story, and it's for me, it's weird. I'm doing a lot of sharing in these episodes that I normally wouldn't do because, you know, obviously podcasts are about the guest, not the host. But it's nice to be able to share what I went through and remind myself that I did do that, because I think sometimes we forget. Now that I'm 30 weeks pregnant, I am sort of thinking, how did I do that? But I did. So I need to remember that I did do it. And if I did it before, it's possible again.
And your body will remember. That's the amazing thing about bodies that have birthed. Even if you think you can't, your body retains muscle memory. Your body knows how to do this.
Yeah.
So you just need to let go and let your body do what it does and you'll fly it.
Okay, great. Hopefully. I've already kind of, I've shared little bits here and there through previous episodes, but essentially, my first contraction kicked in at 6:30 on the 1st of August, which was my due date. By 10:30, I was in the comb. I had the TENS machine on. So at home, it was coming, like the sensations were full on. I was actually vomiting in the sink in the kitchen.
Very common.
Yeah.
Very, very common.
And anyone who knows me knows I absolutely, there's one thing I can't deal with at all is getting sick. I can't.
You were crying properly.
So I hate it.
It's horrible.
Hate it. But I was thinking, like, because I was almost in the beginning going, is this a contraction? Because it was like a hot flush, what I would imagine a hot flush to be, like heat through my body. And I wasn't really sure initially. And then it started to ramp up and ramp up. And the TENS machine, I didn't necessarily know if it was any good until I put it into action. Now I love it and I can't wait to use it again. So I had that ramped up. We arrived at the comb at 10:30 and I was 6 centimetres. And then I was very lucky because I wanted to be in the pool in the comb. And it's a bit of a lottery. Obviously, if there's another woman labouring in it, you've missed your chance. But it was empty. I was really, really lucky. So I got to go into the pool, which was amazing. And then I'm not sure how many hours later.
Time is funny, isn't it?
It's
it doesn't.
Weird.
Yeah, you don't really have a concept of it. It's very different. Time runs differently when you're in labour.
Totally. I was definitely a few hours in the water, but I got to 10 centimetres. And then, like you, no, it's a bit like Cathal just didn't want to come out. He was just happy out. And it was kind of like, and every time I'd be like, am I ready? Am I, you know, and I was thinking, this is it. Because I was feeling pressure, but it was just not happening. Anyway, got out. And I ended up giving birth on the bed. And you know, I was very lucky that I had, you know, my partner was really supportive. I was very lucky I had a doula. And I know for people listening, like this, these are a lot of people to mention that maybe they're not in that position right now to have. I also had a fabulous midwife, and my consultant was amazing. And she really hung back and respected my choices, my wishes. And I gave birth to him at 18 minutes past three in the morning. And yeah, it was amazing. I mean, look, it was, I will never forget that moment when his head is coming out. It's like
intense.
You know, it's intense, people. But it's also, you feel, as you said, you feel like Superwoman. You really do. There's no better feeling in the world. So look, it was incredible. My consultant did tell me afterwards that I think I'm the only person she's ever heard sing during labor. I was singing when I was in the birthing pool, apparently. And I was saying to Damon, is that true? And he said, oh, yeah, you are, yeah. Singing along to
your
playlist.
Do you have a nice voice?
Sometimes. I doubt it was when I was in labor. But yeah, no, look, it was brilliant. And I feel very, very, very fortunate. So let's talk about, you know, that first twinge, the first contraction, and what that might feel like for, particularly for a first time mom to be.
So we kind of forget that all of our systems are connected. So when you have your period and how you experience period pain is not dissimilar to how you might experience the first twinge, because it's the same thing that's happening.
It's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes people feel period pain down their legs. Sometimes people feel it really in their lower back. And normally in the first, that what we call the latent stage of labor, which is from about 0 to 3/4 centimeters. And just as a caveat, let me explain, because sometimes we talk about centimeters and it's like, what are you talking about? So yeah, we're not talking about centimeters in the vagina. We're talking about your cervix. So your cervix is the neck of the womb. And I know some people will be like, oh, that's obvious, but it's not. It's not actually. So the physical changes you don't actually see on the outside. The changes are internal on the inside. So it's your cervix. And when we say 3 to 4, it's because it's a guesstimate. So if I examined somebody, I might say 3. Somebody else might say 2 and a bit. Somebody else might say 4. It's a relative guesstimate. Yeah,
you're not putting a ruler up there.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And there would be a kind of research that would suggest that doctors would overestimate slightly and midwives would underestimate slightly.
Why?
I suppose one of the theories would be that midwives would like to give more time.
Oh, okay.
Whereas doctors would come from a more physiological, medicalized kind of, so they would be on, if that makes sense. So that's what we're talking about. So in that latent stage of labor, that can come in fits and starts. Mm. So you can have a couple hours and you think, oh, here we go. And then it might just ebb away. Normally for first time mums, if first time that your body's going through, that's what is happening. It ebbs and flows. So there could be a couple of false starts, and it can be gutting that you think, oh, here we are. And you might go in and get checked out and they'd say, I'm sorry, you're not in labor yet. But don't lose heart. It doesn't mean things aren't happening. It just means it's taking a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So not until you get to the 3 or 4 centimeters would we be described or medically diagnosed as in labor.
Yes.
So we call the 3 to 10 centimeters active labor. And that whole 0 to 10 centimeters is also called the first stage of labor.
And also, as you said, your body is doing something it's never done before. So even to get to 1 centimeter is a big deal.
Is huge. So there isn't another. So the neck of the womb, the cervix is a muscle. There is no other muscle in a human body that goes through a physiological change like that. It is entirely unique. There's no other organ in the body that actually does what our cervix and our uterus do. So it's amazing. Mm. And remember, the uterus has been spending the previous 10 months thickening muscle, getting all of that lovely blood supply to give your baby all the nutrients that it needs, but also to get your uterus toned and strong. And that's what your uterus is. It's one big muscle. So a contraction or a surge or a wave, if we're talking hypnobirthing, starts at the top or the fundus of your uterus. And similarly to the muscle membranes in your heart, so that the heartbeat starts at one part of the heart and then flows through like a wave. is quite similar to the contraction of your uterus. So it starts at the top and then moves down towards your cervix. And what that is doing is it's pushing baby's head down onto the cervix, and it's also drawing up and out your cervix. So that's the mechanical action, if you will.
Yes.
And your baby is an active participant in this, which is really cool because we forget about them sometimes. We think, what are you doing in there? They want most of the time, apart from Cathal, want to be born. So there was a really cool MRI of a woman in labor and a woman giving birth. And the baby was literally almost trampolining off the bottom of the uterus, like physically pushing themselves. You know, pushing themselves, you know, so they are an active part. And like we mentioned, depending on their position, that can hugely affect your pain levels and it can hugely affect the length of your labor. What's the average length of a labor? Well, how long is a piece of string? And the medical books would say that you want a woman to dilate 1 centimeter an hour. We're not computers and our bodies don't work like that. So similar to my story, I got to 5 centimeters, nothing happened for hours. And then I went from 5 to 10 and jig time.
Yes.
But we don't want it to happen in such a way that it's so slow that mum and baby are going to get exhausted. So there's a balancing act there. Yeah. But the best place that you can be for early labour, as long as you're comfortable and as long as you've the right support and as long as all things are healthy and well, and there's no reason that you need to go into your maternity unit, best place for you is at home. If that's comfortable for you. So at this stage, your contractions will have started out maybe 1 every 20 minutes, 1 every 10 minutes, then 1 every 7 minutes. And there's some great apps as well. It used to be like when I first started training, it was people with stopwatches.
Yeah, I used an app as well. I can't remember which one it was.
There's loads of them. If there's loads and they're all free. So if you just put in contraction app.
And are they all as good as each other?
Yeah, because I mean, effectively what you want is that you press start and stop. So when you at the beginning of the wave or the contraction, you press start. And then a contraction has a beginning, middle and end. It's not just the same intensity for the entire time. So you'll go, oh, it's starting, and then it'll reach a pinnacle. So if you imagine going up the ski lift, so you're cranking up the ski lift and then you have that moment at the top where you catch your breath and it's very intense, and then you go down the side of the mountain. Or a wave breaking, the wave is building, reaches breaking point, and then it flows onto the shore. So if you think of that analogy in your head, it's much more handleable.
Oh, it is, and that's really good advice.
And it's one contraction at a time.
Exactly.
You're just taking, you're not thinking, and that's why time is irrelevant. So you're thinking,
being present is so important.
It is the ultimate act of mindfulness.
It really is.
It's just about, and again, at that stage, having hopefully done your prep, that you're filling your mind with your affirmations, you can do this, and being supported by a birth partner who's telling you, you're doing a great job.
Exactly.
You're brilliant. I'm so proud of you. And it's a really emotional time as well. You know, I used to think that being a midwife was half psychologist, half priest and half exorcist. But, you know, it's a time that you feel, and I suppose, very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And a time that you can feel you can offload some, you know, and that's when I talk about birth as a healing. I think that's really important to say as well. So a load of emotions. You can have excitement, fear, shock, funnily enough, because even though you've been pregnant for ages, it can be quite shocking to go into labor. But the actual relative pain is very different for everyone. And some people have a really tough time, and that's why there's loads of options for pain relief.
Yes.
But again, what I want to emphasize is there is no right or wrong way to give birth. There is no better birth or worse birth.
No.
Abdominal birth or cesarean are still birth.
Exactly.
In fact, you've the scar to show for it.
Yeah.
But it's about you deciding what you want, you deciding what you might want if this happens, and you educating yourself about your choices within the maternity unit that you're going into.
And then if it doesn't go to plan, and if you want to say a vaginal delivery, but it ends up in a C-section, you know, maybe to go gentle with yourself, and to trust that perhaps in that situation, that was the only option for to make sure that you and baby would be safe. And sometimes, you know, and I, that's why for me, when I had my birth preferences, yes, I had my wishes and desires, but I was also extremely open-minded. And I did always deep down feel that if my little boy is destined to come into the world, you know, via C-section, I'm okay with that. As long as he's okay and I'm okay. It's not my deepest desire, but I'm okay with it. And you know, I think it's really important to not have such rigid ideas around birth, because I think that's where I know a lot of people I know have felt very deflated when things didn't go to their plan, you know.
And take it personally that it's that, and some of the, unfortunately, some of the language around obstetrics can be very negative, you know. Failure, you know, there's a lot of failing this and failing right. that. And what I want to emphasize is there's no such thing.
No.
You've whatever way you birth your human, you are still an absolute rock star in my eyes.
Yeah.
And if you can view yourself as that this is just part of my story, this is what had to be done. And isn't it great that that's possible? But the most important thing, a lot of trauma around birth is, regardless of the actual minutiae, is because people feel unlistened to or unheard. They feel that things were said and done around them that they didn't understand, and that nobody took the time to explain. And in the main, that they didn't feel in control of the situation. And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And if you put in the, not to apportion any blame or anything like that, but if you try and go, right, I am the most important person in this room and I need everyone to know that. If you get a little bit like that and make sure that you don't lose your voice, that can be a great way to ensure that you get, are able to ask questions and get answers. Everybody wants the same thing. Every person working in a maternity unit wants you to have a healthy baby and to have a good experience. But everyone's coming at it from a slightly different angle. This is your experience. You're in the driver's seat. You decide what you want.
That's really great.
Yeah. And I suppose we sometimes when we go into a hospital, and I hear it a lot, we lose our voice a little
bit. And you know what? The reason I pause there is I'm just thinking, I think a lot of people are, we're, especially Irish women, we can be very much kind of people pleasing. And Usher, you know best. And I bow my head to science. I mean, the reason I'm here having this conversation with you is because of medical interventions. You know, I had cancer 10 years ago, so I'm extremely aware of how fabulous medicine and science is. But, you know, when it comes to a natural process like birth, more often than not, you are the authority, far more than anyone else, because it's your body and you know what's going on. You know what the sensations are. So I think that's so important, not to lose, as you said, not to lose your voice. So use it. Don't lose it.
Absolutely. And if you don't like something that's happening, you say it. Remember, you're a consumer and a service user of it's a maternity service. They're not doing you a favor. You're a consumer of the service. So
very good.
And that's not kind of assume that things are going to go bad, because most like staff in, we have such an amazing staff, you know, I'm not, you know, but we as women need to get better. If you don't ask, you won't get.
Yeah.
And this is your experience. You're not there to make friends. You're there to have a good experience. And if something is happening that you don't understand or that you don't like, say it. And there's probably a really good explanation for why something has to happen or why something is being done. But any medic or midwife or nurse worth their salt likes to be questioned, because there's always a rationale for it. But it's incumbent on you to ask the question, because they're not telepathic either. If, you know, people won't know that you're not happy with something unless you actually verbalize it.
Yes.
So that's why in preparation, and I know you've spoken about this, I would see birth preferences as being really important, just to have a framework of, okay, best case scenario, what I would love to happen.
Yeah.
And then when that's discussed with your care provider, they can go, okay, I want that to happen too, but unfortunately in this unit, it is our procedure not to be able to do that, or we will absolutely try and do that, but if this, this and this happens, we won't be able to. So it's a conversation. It's then signed and put in your notes, and you then don't have to explain if there's a change of shift or if the person that you've been dealing with isn't on that. You know, it's there in black and white for everybody to see. And it doesn't have to be, you know, War and Peace 900 pages. It just a simple page, like you know, with just the bullet points of what's important to you.
Yeah.
And the maternity service will endeavour their very best to facilitate you. Mm. You know, but if you, as I said, if you don't ask, you don't get. So
we're in active labour.
So we're in active labour now. So things crank up a notch, okay? Mm. Things crank up a notch because your body has now gotten to the point of that it kind of has gotten into its groove. So your contractions will be moving up in intensity, so like moving up the gears of a car, and they'll also be coming closer together. Mm. So at the absolute height of labour, you could be having 4 to 5 contractions in 10 minutes. So that what that means is you'll have a contraction probably lasting a whole 60 seconds, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less, but at least 45 seconds to a minute and a half max. Mm. Minute and a half now is a little bit at the very end, but you know, I'm just trying to cover all the bases.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you'll have what we call a resting period. So that you'll have no, you know, your body will just relax. And the preparation that we're talking about is really important, because if you can do something that you're able to switch gears and actually conserve your energy, it can be really useful for that time, because you haven't gotten exhausted at that stage.
Yes.
It's also at that stage that some people opt to move from kind of gas and air or up to an epidural. So they generally won't give an epidural until you're in active labour. So, and it's again, some people, the thoughts of not being able to ambulate and move is far worse than any discomfort that they might feel. So decide yourself, but again, be open to it, because you don't know how you'll experience. Like I would have said, I would never have had an epidural, but I was delighted I got it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So so it's about being open, again, being open to the experience.
Yes. So you really kind of have to be 3 or 4 before they'll give it to you. And then what's the cutoff point to get the epidural?
You can have it right up until 8 or 9 centimetres, but ultimately if you're kind of 9 centimetres,
you've done the heavy lifting.
There's your 90, like if you think about, you're 90% of the way there.
Yeah, yeah. Now you still have the whole part of getting the human out of the body.
Yeah, but with the way epidurals now work, so epidurals in kind of when I would have been born, for example, my mum had none, but you were like sack of potatoes. You basically had no feeling from kind of the nipples down, and would probably 12 hours later would still have a catheter in. Like they were really heavy.
Okay.
They were like spinal blocks almost, really. But now actually they they remove the pain, but you still feel the pressure. And in fact, coming up, if it is a little bit heavy, they'll actually turn it down. So it's more, so you can actually feel what your body is doing.
Which is really important, for the likes of minimizing tearing and things
really
like that.
Important. But yeah. Also, again, if we're talking about that experience, to feel the exit of a human from your body, how cool is that?
You know, that's really reassuring, because I think, and maybe it's my own ignorance, but I was aware that you still had sensation, but I didn't know how much. So you still had a lot of sensation.
Yeah, oh, totally. Like, absolutely.
But the pain was removed.
Exactly.
That's fabulous.
Exactly. So, yeah, absolutely. I had pretty much full pressure sensation. So, I wasn't doing coached pushing. I was going with my body.
Oh, great.
So, which nobody could coach me, Sheila. Forget about it. They're just like, let her do what she likes. So we're in active labour. So, so that's it. It's just important just to have options, and also really importantly to have an active and mobile birth.
Yeah.
So, if you have an epidural, you can still move side to side and use things like peanut balls. But if you don't, you're using the bed, you're using the birthing ball, you're swaying from side to side, you're holding on to your partner. It's really good to have a little bit of a smooch at that stage as well, to get that oxytocin flowing, and also so that you can feel safe really important that you feel safe in the space that you're birthing in. And
I suppose it's something we don't talk enough about, because I think sometimes people are uncomfortable with it, particularly in Ireland, to talk about the link between, at the end of the day, having a baby. Okay, so we create a baby in the conventional way by having sex.
Yes.
It's a continuation. It's our sexual organs, which is why,
and
having
oxytocin is the hormone that you release when you orgasm, is the hormone that you need to birth. It's the one that controls the contractions.
Yeah. So you might not want to snog the face off your fella or whoever it is.
Particularly, like, hospitals are not sexy places.
But like, feeling loved up, feeling connection as
absolutely.
That's really important.
Absolutely. Like, feeling that, you know, how you got pregnant in the first place, but feeling safe and that kind of warmth, that's when labour can go really, really well. Yeah, that security blanket.
And it makes sense. Actually, when we stop kind of that part of the brain overthinking, it actually makes sense. So, so we are now, are we nearing full dilation?
Yeah, and I want people at home now to think of labour. I don't want you to think of somebody lying in a bed.
Yeah.
I want you to think of somebody on all fours. I want you to think of somebody in a squatting position. I want you to think of somebody standing by the bed and then lying on their side, because that is, for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, how women gave birth all the time. It is only in very recent history, like in the last 400 years or so, that women gave birth on their back.
Yeah. And even for me, when I was in the birthing pool, it was big enough that I could be on all fours in it, and various different positions on my side. And I had kind of don't really remember what positions I was in, except there were some photos taken and I saw them afterwards. And wow, it's kind of surreal to watch.
Totally.
It's like out of body. It's like, I don't remember that. But often I was on all fours in the bath. And look, again, while the majority of women will have their babies in hospitals, there are also plenty of women who are opting for the home birth idea as well.
Absolutely.
And in that situation, you may well have your own birthing pool at home.
Yeah, which is kind of like a big paddling pool.
Yeah,
exactly. And also feel comfortable as well. Like, we talked about kind of what you're going to wear. Sometimes people want clothes on and sometimes people want clothes off. Like, sometimes people don't want any clothes on them at all.
I had no clothes on, but I didn't even know I had no clothes
on. Yeah, it's not even conscious.
I wasn't even in. I was gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, midwives are unembarrassable.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And they have seen it all before.
I can imagine, yeah.
And also not to be embarrassed about your body.
Or, I think you're too distracted. Well, for me,
yeah,
I wouldn't have even.
Some people are, though.
Or are they?
Yeah, I think some women are. The thoughts of somebody seeing their vagina, the thoughts of somebody seeing their pubic hair, the thoughts of somebody seeing their breasts can actually hold them back a bit.
Okay, then you know what? That's really important
so
to say.
It's so it's just like, honestly, we are unembarrassable. Like, people that work in a hospital are totally unembarrassable. So just do whatever you feel you need to do. Go with your body.
Yeah.
So we're coming up to what we call transition. So transition is a really interesting place. So what, from a physiological point, it's your body moving from a point toward the end of your first stage of labour and into the second stage of labour, which is the pushing or breathing down the baby stage. And you can get kind of mixed signals. So I remember I was helping a woman birth her baby, and at that stage she went, "Okay, I've had enough now." And I went, "Really?" She's like, "Yeah, pack my bags. I'm not doing this today. I just have had enough now, and I'm not having this baby today." Yeah. And I was like, "Okay, well, listen, I'll pack your bag. You keep breathing there, and then we'll see where we're at." And literally 20 minutes later, she was breathing her baby down.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird mixing, and it can also be a time when women can get quite upset and lose a bit of faith in themselves. So you hear on most births, "I can't do it. No, I can't do it." You know, it's when the fear creeps in. And that's why you have a great doula or midwife or birth support that goes, "Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. This is just a phase." But in your head, it doesn't feel like a phase. In your head, it feels like, "All right, okay, this is just like, why did I have this baby? Mm. This is a terrible idea." Or there can be a lot of partner hate as well. Like, "Look what you've done to me. Your penis is never coming near me again, ever." You know, and that's transition. And then we move into full dilation. So cervix is all gone and baby's head is moving down into the birth canal, into the vagina.
Mm.
And remember, the vagina isn't the outside bit. The vagina is that amazing cavern, if you imagine.
Yes.
And the fibres of the vagina are like a concertina. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're folded up against each other. So literally, when the baby's head is there, your body literally is able to expand. Mm. It's incredible.
Yeah,
able to expand a whole human head.
Mm.
And that's not the bit that actually is uncomfortable. It's the skin and muscle on the outside that you feel an intense burning.
Yeah.
And that's why perineal massage from about 34 weeks is amazing.
Yes.
Because you learn to get to understand what that feeling is like.
We spoke about that in the last episode and something
I know you did. It's so good. Yeah, I'm so behind it.
Yeah. So, and I obviously when it was happening, I wasn't particularly enjoying it, but I was glad that I did it when it came to giving birth. And even though obviously, can you compare, you know, it, but it does give you a little bit of a sense of it is that kind of hot feeling. It's kind of a hot, burny kind of a, it doesn't sound very nice, but it's good to psychologically prepare yourself for that sensation too.
And also just so it's familiar to you. So a lot of the fear in birth is because I don't know what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can do a couple of small things, and even to understand, I'm a real visual learner, so I just love the thought of imagining what's going on inside, all the different parts of you working together, your baby working with your brain, sending hormonal signals, the placenta sending hormonal signals, and the baby's brain sending hormonal signals, and your uterus doing all this job. You don't consciously make your uterus contract. It does it all by itself.
It does.
It knows what to do.
So I remember after I gave birth having really strong opinions on how I felt about the experience. And obviously they were overwhelmingly positive. But I also felt like there are kind of almost extremes. You get the horror stories and then you get the, it's so natural and you just breathe through it and it's fine. And while obviously that's possible and, it, you know, it's beautiful and having, you know, the beautiful breathing techniques, which are really important. I'm a massive believer in it. But there's also a time and a place for it. And for me, when my baby's head was coming out, it was you know, a level of experience that I've never had before. And I think it does a disservice to women to kind of dumb it down, because it's the most intense thing I've ever experienced in my life.
But it's that culmination. That is the moment that you stop being you and you become somebody's other.
Yeah.
So you become a mother in that moment as that. So it is the most intense, and all of that is going on in your body. It actually gives me shivers down my spine because it's that important.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think
we're warriors. Basically, I think we're absolute.
Like women are
so powerful.
And the amazing
thing, we have no idea
is
how powerful we are.
After you give birth, your vagina, by the way, is built for this. So, you know,
this is what it's meant to do.
This is what it's meant to do. And people are afraid of tears and stuff. And the perineal massage can help. But also how midwives and doctors are trained, they can guide, you know, they can really, really help and put on hot compresses and things like that. But ultimately, our bodies were designed to do this. And most people heal beautifully and brilliantly. So much so that the baby's out and on mum's chest and you look back and sometimes there's not even a graze.
Yeah.
And a human has come out of that and it now looks brand spanking new, like amazing.
Amazing.
Really that incredible.
Quick.
Yeah.
Right.
And
wow.
That's what I want to emphasize as well. Again, it's about choice. So if you think, yeah, that's something I think I could handle, maybe I'll see how I'll go and I'll have the epidural on the back burner, but I'll decide. Or you might be somebody that doesn't sound like that's for me. I think I want an epidural in early, sooner rather than later. So again, just educating yourself and, you know, watch some, you know, medical free births. You know, there's some great ones on YouTube. You know, watch some hypnobirthing births just so that you can grasp an idea of like, this isn't just for some people. This can be for everyone.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I talk about becoming a birth goddess. And I know that can sound a bit woo woo and people roll their eyes. But what I mean by that is that you get to enjoy this amazing moment And then you get to join this amazing club that you've grown and birthed a human. So, you know, to feel like a goddess, to have that feeling of, I am a woman, hear me roar. Mm. Look what I've just done. And the amount of endorphins that women have just after they give birth, there is no other recorded bodily or physiological experience that gives you that high. There is nothing else. It is the highest dopamine and endorphin hit.
And it really is.
And wouldn't it be lovely if we could embrace that and enjoy that and go, oh, I'm really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, no matter what happens, you get a human.
Yeah.
You get your human. So there is a prize. So this isn't, you know, breaking a leg. This is pain or discomfort. There is a purpose to it.
That's the best reward ever at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is the golden hour afterwards. Isn't
oh, it's magic. Yeah. So what we would put down on a birth preference, what we would hope is that we would do a thing called, used to be called delayed cord clamping, but we now try and call it optimal cord clamping. So if you imagine that you have the umbilical cord, and at any one time between the placenta and the umbilical cord, about 30% of the baby's blood volume is actually flowing from one to the other. So it kind of seemed a bit crazy that certainly when I started training, the minute the baby was out, we clamped and cut.
Yeah.
And though all that lovely stem cells and all that lovely blood just went into the bin.
Yeah.
But now we've realised that if baby is born in good condition, and 90% of them are, that we put baby onto mum's chest and we actually wait for the cord to stop pulsating so that all of that lovely fetal blood goes into the baby who it belongs to.
Mm.
And in a physiological third, so that's the third stage. So the end of the second stage happens with the baby's birth, and then the third stage is the delivery of the placenta.
Yeah.
And so then we
which obviously once you've
birthed a human head, the placenta is like, you know.
Yeah, don't worry about
it. A lot of people don't remember it.
I barely remember it.
But what
you're so loved up at that stage.
You are. But what I would say is to have a little bit of awe for the placenta. So I've always, so some people are freaked out because on one side they kind of look a bit kind of kidney or liverish, but on
the
side they are, they're about the size of a dinner plate.
They're massive.
And also consider that that's the wound inside you, because that's adhered to the side of your uterus. So that's why you have loci or have bleeding after delivery for up to 6 weeks, because there's a wound the size of a dinner plate that's trying to heal.
Yeah.
So, but on the baby side, I love the idea that if you look at it, it kind of looks like a tree trunk, the umbilical cord, and the veins and the little blood vessels look like the roots or the branches of a tree. And I just think there's a real tree of life mirroring of that. Like, nature is so cool. Nature is just amazing.
Yeah.
And so if you're not squeamish, have a look, ask to have a look at your amazing placenta and imagine that that is something, an organ that your body grew to support your baby, and then you don't need it anymore. So you don't need it.
I did need it.
Yes.
I could put it in a box and got it sent off to a lab, and then
You did placental encapsulation.
I did. And I actually must inquire about it this time around as well. I've nothing to compare it to because I obviously, you know.
But again, it worked for you.
It worked for me.
And you did your research.
And I would like to do it again.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it sounds kind of, I think initially when you hear about it, it almost sounds barbaric. But and some people do placenta smoothies and different things like that. I didn't. I just, you know, took it the capsule away, and it sounds crazy. But when you look into the potential benefits of it, for me, it felt right. And for other people who wouldn't, and that's cool too.
And I suppose that's our message about birth. It's not about everybody. It's about what would you like? What do you think? What does your opinion? Because you're the most important person.
Yeah.
This is your experience. So grab it, run with it, and do what you want.
Yeah.
And then it's my job as a midwife, and it's our job as maternity service to be better at facilitating that. And hopefully we are moving more towards a woman-centered care. But that would be the goal.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be lovely that if our experience was was the main, was the most, and it was the rarity that somebody had a rubbishy experience.
I know. I just,
absolutely. That would be my dream. And I think it's totally possible.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to say. Whether you're going public, private, whether you're going midwife-led or medical-led or whatever, if you put yourself at the centre, if you ask, what do I want? Why do I want it? And use your voice. It is so possible, no matter if you have a vaginal delivery, induction, C-section, that you're at the centre of this. You're in charge.
Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to C-sections.
No, and you know what? Before we get to C-sections, let's talk about the medical interventions
yes.
that can happen.
Yes.
Depending. And look, in an ideal situation, if you decide to have a natural birth, you wouldn't have medical interventions. But there are times when it's necessary for the safety of you and your baby. And
aren't we lucky we live in a first world country
correct.
That we have access to some of the best medical diagnostics and some of the best obstetricians and midwives are the experts in the norm, and obstetricians are there to catch when things don't go to plan.
Sure.
And with the best will in the world, with all the preparation under the sun,
yeah.
bodies are sometimes don't play ball, and babies sometimes don't play
yeah,
ball.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So this is never, it's never somebody's fault if
no,
things don't go
not.
To plan. But so the things that can happen, sometimes babies don't like being in labor.
Yeah. Okay.
And they will let you know because their heart rate will go a bit funny, and then they need to get out. Basically, we need to get them out. So there also another intervention would be which would be really, really common, would be an induction. So an induction means instead of your body going into labor yourself, that we try and start your body into labor. So what they do is you're given prostaglandin, which is a man-made hormone that's put either kind of via gel or a tampon, or there's a balloon as well, basically to soften the cervix so that your waters can be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're put up on a drip. It's harder than you going into labor yourself, because you're going from no pain at all to 5 pains every 10 minutes within a very short period of time. So your body has no time to adjust. So it's really, really full on. And I would definitely be considering an epidural and an early one at that if I was being augmented. And also it's exhausting. You know, you can go in for your induction on a Tuesday and you mightn't give birth until the Friday.
Because
it can take, you know, it can take 24, 48 hours to actually get started.
So is it rare that you would be induced and not it result in an epidural?
Very rare. Yes,
okay.
Very rare, because
yeah.
it's just so hard. You know, you just don't have time to adjust at all.
Yeah.
So again,
it's forcing your body.
Absolutely. And again,
into contractions.
There
yeah.
are lots of reasons why that is absolutely necessary.
Sure.
But sometimes the reasons can be a little bit squiffy, I'd say. So, for example, the busiest week for inductions in the whole world is the week before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That's not because there's more babies due the week before Christmas. It's due to facilitate both parents, but also staff.
Mm-hmm.
So just again, use your voice.
And
make sure you're clear on the reasoning and that there is an actual reasoning behind an induction, that it's not just to suit somebody.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It really does. I've already been told as well, because I am so, what was I, 30? Was I 38 having Cahill? I was 37 pregnant, 38. I think I was going on 38, or I was 38. Anyway, I'm 42 now, 4 years on. And I've already been told that if I go a day over my due date, induction is happening. That's it. That's
yeah.
the protocol. So I will be doing everything
yeah.
from 36
but again,
weeks.
But again,
to start labor.
Question that. Like a week here, there, you know.
Oh no, I've been told one day. You'll be in. That'll be it.
But again, any intervention has to be done with
not
informed consent.
To do with age.
Yeah, but any intervention has to be done with consent. So an informed consent, and that means you understand why something is being done.
Okay.
And if you don't like something, get a second opinion. Just, you know, again, don't just think, oh, they have to do this. They don't have to do anything. You need to understand why, and they need to explain why.
Okay.
And anybody worth their salt can explain it in 3 seconds. Like, this isn't, this isn't costing a lot of time. No matter how big the disaster or the emergency, there's always time to ask questions and there's always time to give answers. Mm. So that's inductions. And then if things in the kind of second stage of baby doesn't like it, or if mum is exhausted, or if your blood pressure shoots up, or if you start bleeding, there are other reasons why, okay, labour just can't continue. And your medical history as well. You know, there can be lots of different things that we're not aware of and all of a sudden make themselves known in labour. So, or if your waters go and then nothing happens.
Sure, yeah.
Again, then you need to step in because there's a slight risk of infection. Mm. So there's rationale behind all these things, but just make sure that you understand why.
Yeah.
And then...
Is syntocin then...
Syntocin is the synthetic form of oxytocin.
Yeah.
So synthetic tocin, same as oxytocin. So what it does is it gives your body the man-made version of oxytocin to give your body contractions.
Yeah, okay.
So it, that's hard. Like they feel a lot more intense.
Yeah, sure.
So again, just, you know, be open-minded, ask questions, make sure you understand.
Mm-hmm.
And also different maternity units have hugely different policies. So just because your friend down the road, this happened, doesn't mean that that's your story at all. Things change. And even consultant to consultant would have different rationale. So just make sure that you understand. And then we get to sections. So about in Ireland, the rates are huge between hospitals. So anything between 18 to 20% and in some units, 45%.
Okay.
So we average out at about a third. So one in three. So it's possible. But I love the thought of, instead of calling it a cesarean section, that we call it abdominal birth.
Yeah.
Because that, again, changing that, you know, it makes it more personal, I think. And there have been great strides in the last couple of years that things like a gentle cesarean, which means, so it used to be that you, can appear, if you're watching them a lot, quite rough, I suppose. So with the cesarean section, you go in, you're given a spinal anesthesia, so it gives you quite a heavy block, but it wears off quite quickly. And a friend of mine who had one described it as, it feels like somebody rooting around in your handbag, except you're the handbag.
Yeah, okay.
So you feel kind of pulling and tugging, but it's not painful. And what they do is they cut through the various different layers, and then they open up your uterus, and then they release the waters. So when you're there, you can hear a lot of suctioning. That's not because you're bleeding. That's because the lycra fluid around baby.
Yeah.
And then the doctor reaches in and gets baby's head and pulls it out in a gentle cesarean. They then let baby birth.
Yeah, I've seen videos of it.
So
it looks amazing.
And it's a much more gentle.
Yeah.
And if baby is in good condition, there's no reason why that shouldn't be an option, or certainly ask.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes if there's in any way, if baby is in any way not happy,
sure,
they need to get out. And that's the amazing thing. In every unit in the country, there is a theatre on standby that's just there waiting in case you're the person that needs the help. And it is amazing in an emergency situation how fast you can react. And we're just really lucky to live in this country that we have access to that, because isn't it great that that's, you know, isn't that so cool that we can get babies out the sunroof? I just think that's amazing.
Of course it is.
But again, you know, just for mums, if you've had a cesarean, obviously your pain afterwards is going to be, it's going to be tougher, because what other operation are you then handed a small human and go and mind that?
Yeah. So it's major surgery.
So just go really easy with yourself, get lots of help, lots of pain relief afterwards, no matter how you give birth. You bleed after you give birth, less with the C-section, more with a vaginal delivery. And people can be a bit freaked out by that because they're like,
yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
And it'd be quite heavy. If you ever go in and buy maternity pads, I call them surfboards. You need, you know, about three of those, and you'd be changing them quite frequently.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember my first shower afterwards. It was like a scene from Carrie.
Oh, yes. Oh yeah, but it is like,
I was like, what's going on?
And also
body?
If you're breastfeeding, because when you breastfeed you get a surge of oxytocin, your uterus clamps,
right,
and you can have a little spurt out. So that can be, don't wear white trousers would be
black all the way, black all the way.
Yeah. So and
things
again,
we do, eh?
Yeah, and again, just for feeding, if you have a C-section, your milk usually comes in day 3. If you have a C-section, that can be delayed.
Mm.
So antenatal expression can be a great way to, so that's gathering a little bit of colostrum and having it kind of in the freezer, and it means that if your milk is a little bit slow to come in, then you can give that to baby and baby will be happy out.
But it's very possible, obviously, to breastfeed after a C-section.
Absolutely,
as well. Yeah.
Absolutely.
If that's you decide.
Absolutely, if that, you know, if that's and just to emphasize as well, I am in no way a breastfeeding bully. I hate that idea that women are bullied in. It is, again, totally about what's right for you.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing about breastfeeding at the moment during the pandemic is women have COVID antibodies in their breast milk. So even if you're not mad on it, if you could just do your research and see what you think, because you're almost giving the baby like a bit of an immunization by breastfeeding them.
Yeah.
And it's a great, because newborns, their little immune systems aren't developed, so they're very vulnerable. So it's a great way to, you know, even if you weren't thinking about it, if you just give it a wee bit of a bash, even for a couple of weeks, it can really help with that.
Yeah.
But again, no pressure.
No, and I
need to be really clear about that. I hate that idea that we put pressure or guilt people. This is like,
there's enough of that, and we do that to ourselves enough as well. I mean,
nobody will beat yourself up worse than yourself. You know,
I have spoken before about my own struggles with breastfeeding. So I was pumping and feeding on the breast for, I think it was about 7 or 8 weeks I got to. And for me...
Well done you. You're amazing.
Thanks, but I really talk about meeting my demons. I did during that period because... And you said the word earlier, and it should be banned, because I did feel like a failure. Because I thought, well, I've had this dream birth experience. I'm Earth Mama. This, of course, should be just a piece of piss. I should be able to do this.
Here's your sister. I'm the expert. And I ended up having to pump and got mastitis 6 times.
There you go.
And didn't tell anyone how bad it was because I was so ashamed. And I'm the one that talks about female empowerment. Like, ha, 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 ha. But so, you know, if it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
So again,
I really beat myself up.
Oh,
shame
sure.
is so powerful.
The shame around birth and birth choice and birthing. It's kind of, I think, the last taboo. And I would love this conversation to even open it up in people's minds of themselves, that we just need to be a little bit kinder to ourselves, be a bit more amazed, be a bit more focused on what we can do as opposed to what we can't. And if it all goes to hell in a handbag, you've still grown a human. You're amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So important. I think these episodes are, well, again, they're exactly what I would have loved to have heard. So I suppose I'm there. Selfish in one way, but I know that if I would have loved to have heard them, there'll be plenty of other people that'll hear them that'll feel the same, because I'm already getting a lot of direct messages.
That's great.
Which is brilliant. So people are connecting with the content, and I know, like you were, I was hungry for information and I wanted to know as much as I could. And this is a really good refresher course for me, because obviously, you know, I'm in the third trimester now, so it's all ahead once again. Everybody talks about the tea and toast after you give birth, and I didn't realise how epic it was until I was having it.
And my question is, what do they have in other countries? Like, what, you know, I've always, like, do you get a bit of pasta if you're in Italy? You know, and is that the best pasta you've ever heard? But there is something, and I mean, it's why I would never have eaten white sliced bread. But when I did nights, and I did a lot of them, it's all, because it tastes even good, even if you're not, if you're working. But it's magic, and it is just delicious. And there's that satisfaction.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's the best tea and toast you'll ever have
in your life.
In your life. and just to hold that space as well. So I know when a baby is born, you're dying to tell the world. But once that little, bubble is broken, then everybody's in and you have to text. So what I would say is an hour makes no difference.
Even 2 or 3. Give
just
it time.
You, your birth partner, your baby,
that.
Hold that space for each other. have lovely skin to skin, which should be uninterrupted. So baby's just wearing a nappy on your chest or on the other parent's chest. Take every picture, look at their perfect little hands, look at their nails on their toes, like it's the size of a grain horse. It's so perfect. Do they look like granny? Do they look like granddad? Do they look a bit like a frog? That's what feelings look like. Do they look, whose eyes do they have? What little rosebud mouth? All how perfect, because you've grown that.
Yeah.
And it is a physical manifestation of the love that you have. You know, there's something really, you know, this is a new generation. This is new hope. And it's yours. It's yours now. And I just think that I call it the sacred space. I really think there's something really special about that. And so get off the phone I have a confession. I am addicted to sniffing newborn babies.
Oh God, it's nothing like
addicted. I used to go around the nursery and literally just sniff babies. Like they just,
there she
I don't
goes
know
again.
What, it's like catnip. They are the most delicious.
I know.
Their little velvety head.
Baby smell.
It's like,
oh God, it's
like their skin is like a petal, like a rose petal. It's so beautiful. And also, if you are lucky enough to get a hairy baby. So let me explain. Some babies, Felix was as bald as a little rat, but some babies are born with hair, like hairy heads, hairy shoulders, hairy backs, hairy ears. And you just want to actually eat them. They're so gorgeous. I just love them. I just think they're just amazing.
Aww.
So just enjoy that little moment wherever you give birth, however you give birth, you and your birth partner, that is, and look what you've made. And no matter what your baby looks like, it's yours, and you'll have never seen anything more beautiful in your life.
And speaking of that, you're such a beautiful communicator. I could just listen to you speak all day. Your voice is magic. But when baby comes out, now I didn't notice this because I'm obviously delighted it's over, and I'm just
climb Mount Everest.
Oh my God,
point.
Yeah, I'm on a high. I'm like, I've never felt more loved up in my life. But my partner did say, like, when Colin came out, like, it was a proper conehead. I was like, what's wrong? And it was like, well, obviously they have to make their way.
And they're not pink.
And they're not pink.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can think, oh my God, I got the alien baby. So
yes.
Babies' heads are not, like, we have a skull and all of our bits of our skull are fused together. Baby skulls are in about 5 different bits.
Mm.
And this is really cool because when they're coming down that birth canal, they actually mold. So they mold into a shape that's easier for us to birth. And it's kind of like an alien cone head. And then if
I didn't see it at all.
And then if you've had an instrumental delivery, so a vacuum or anything like that, they can also have an even more cone head.
Okay, yeah.
So you're going to think that baby is the most gorgeous thing in the world. And then you look back in photographs and go, right. Right. Now, isn't that funny? So, and for dads as well, they can just get, or birth partners, because we can't just assume that it's going to be male. So the other birth partner can kind of be like, oh, that's lovely thing. That's
I remember him saying that. And he also said that Cahan's testicles were really swollen. He was
very
like, they were like size of
and,
a mandarin.
And also,
like,
very
on?
Strangely, in the first couple of days, little girls can have a fake period. So you can find a little.
That's right.
And boys or girls can lactate. They can have a tiny little swelling around their nipples.
Wow.
And a tiny little bit of milk can come out. Just enjoy that moment.
No, and you're right. And something we did as well was because I did find towards the end, because I would have told everyone when I was due.
Yeah.
And the texts that come in picking fast towards the end. And you're a bit like, oh, would you go away?
Yes.
Every time
again, it's pressure.
It is. Every time somebody, anything happening or anything moving, you're like, I will tell you.
But it can be random people. And you're thinking, I wouldn't tell you anyway if it was.
But the thing is, we didn't tell anyone. We didn't even tell our closest.
Don't.
And it was absolutely no offence too, because we're very close to close friends and family.
Mm.
But we just didn't. So the first text that came through was because we knew we were having a boy. We had named him from early in the pregnancy.
Lovely.
Everybody knew what he was called.
And did he look like a Kyle?
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose he was always going to be Kyle anyway.
Yeah.
And we've already named our little girl
That's
as
lovely.
Well. We talk to her all the time. But what was I going to say at all was when we sent the text, I think it was Damien that sent the text, but it was, you know, Kyle's here.
But isn't that fabulous?
But it was
that
fabulous.
They didn't
already
have
here.
To be worried.
Yeah.
Or be concerned. Because what's the first thing we say when we hear a baby's born? is everything okay?
Oh yeah, of course.
There's an assumption of risk. And another thing as well, take black and white pictures.
Black and white. Go
They're
on.
Much kinder. Everyone looks beautiful in sepia.
Oh yes, good. So,
everyone looks lovely. You can be very, I suppose, rosy, rosy hue after birthing a human.
Yes.
So everyone looks lovely in black and white. Everybody, okay. It looks, babies look lovely. Mums and dads and dads and everybody looks
Top
lovely.
Tip.
Yeah. So.
Okay, I love this. Oh, come here. This was a bit fantastic conversation. And
oh, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so
I'd
much.
I'd love to go on and on, but I know you have a child to collect. So
yes.
do I. So next week is going to be all about the moment baby is born, to those early days and weeks. And then I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap up the pregnancy mini-series because I've really enjoyed it.
Because you have to go and birth a human. How
birth
exciting.
A human. I know, so exciting. Do you know what? I feel less afraid now. I was telling you
That's
on the way
great.
Up here, up the stairs, that, you know, you asked me how I was doing and I was saying physically pretty good, but emotionally, mentally, I'm definitely suffering from more anxiety in this pregnancy. And I think it's a feeling of not being as prepared as I was first time round. But I'm definitely feeling a lot less anxious now.
But just to finish on that, you've done the ultimate preparation. You've done it before.
Okay, good.
So your body and your brain remembers, and it will be like getting into a really lovely, comfy pair of jeans. It'll just feel, I know this, I can do this. That's what it'll feel like this time. You'll fly it, you'll be great.
You say all the right things, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome, thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider showing your support. It only takes a minute, I promise, and I would be so grateful. You can leave a rating or a little comment on Apple, or you can click follow on Spotify. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.